Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. You know, these long West Coast trips to call games have given me the gift of time. Time to put on some headphones and listen to my favorite audio titles on Audible. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. From bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. Now, I personally love a good murder mystery, and I'm currently listening to An Honest Man by Michael Corita. It's about murders on a yacht. What more do I need to say? As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. That's audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. This podcast is presented by Cash App. Tommy, this is, to me, the most versatile payment app on the market. There's so many things you can do. Obviously, you can transfer money if someone picks up a bar tab or someone loses on the golf course. But there's so many other things that you can do on Cash App. Shout out Cash App. Welcome to The Old Man of the Three with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 95, Kevin Love. Before we get to Kevin and some other stuff we want to talk about, Tommy, we have an announcement. It went out on social media today. We are doing a live show in Boston on February 9th at the Crystal Ballroom. It is with Marcus Smart. We're really excited. We haven't had Marcus on the show. We've been trying to get him now for about a year. We're going to do a live show with Marcus at the Crystal Ballroom on February 9th in Boston. All the proceeds will benefit Marcus's foundation, the Young Game Changer Foundation, which does a lot of amazing things in communities around the country. The mission of Marcus's foundation is to serve as a source of guidance, motivation, encouragement, and empowerment for inner city student athletes to be game changers on and off the court or field. We're really excited to be doing this show. I know, Tommy, you've been talking with his team lately. Marcus is really excited to do it as well.
Yeah, Marcus is really hyped to do it. He, you know, we were, I think, going to do a live show in Boston regardless, but this was kind of Marcus's idea to do it with a crowd. I think he has such a unique connection with the Celtic fan base, having been there for so long. And so it's like all the more exciting, I feel like, for us when there's somebody who wants to, you know, do it with our fans and wants to do it with, you know, a group of people, not just do it in a quiet room.
Exactly. It'll be fun. Unfortunately, we have to officially cancel our South Florida show, which was going to be at the Broward Center in Fort Lauderdale. We are canceling that show. If you purchase tickets for that show, you will get a full refund. The venue will be reaching out to you via email or however you put your contact info when you bought the tickets, and you will get a full refund. Episode 95, Kevin Love. This was a good catch up with him because I feel like when we had him on previously in Eat, Pray, Dunk segment in the middle of last season, they were really struggling. We had him on in the off season. I feel like Kevin's in such a good place right now, having fun on this Cavs team.
Yeah, he says it on the show that he's almost never been happier as an NBA player than he is this year, but he's so kind of fulfilled in his role right now, and they're rolling. I mean, we're going to get into it with him, but I don't think anybody expected them to be in the position they are now, and they're having guys step up across the board, and he's just happy. And it's fun he's a good friend of ours. You know, we spend a lot of time with him, and it's fun to see him like this from a basketball setting, because, I mean, you know this better than anybody. It's like when you're miserable playing, you know, it wears on you in every part of your life.
Yeah, and look, he says it, and I've said this a million times, and I'm sure we've had other guests on the show say this, but winning is a cure-all in professional sports. And when you are losing, all the little things that can be stressors or aggravators or points of frustration, those things build up much easier. It's sort of like plaque on the back of your teeth. You know, you're going to get it regardless, but if you're brushing your teeth and you're rinsing your mouth, it takes a little bit longer for that plaque to build up. In this analogy, of course, Tommy, winning is brushing your teeth and mouthwash.
Yes. Well, what do you think? You know, we're going to get into this with him, but I think we should talk about the Cavs a little bit because we haven't spent a lot of time on them this year, nor have a lot of other, you know, sort of mainstream media outlets. But what are your initial thoughts on them, you know, in mid-January? Because this is a team that has overachieved by every single metric you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting, we talk about net rating and point differential quite a bit on the show. And generally speaking, the best teams, of course, have the highest net ratings and point differentials. All right, we have an awesome combo with Kevin. Return of the draft. I absolutely crush Tommy and Kevin in this draft. Let's get to our conversation with our friend Kevin Love. Kevin, always great to catch up. I would say this, my only disappointment in today's show is that we are not sharing a bottle of Dujac Burgundy.
Oof.
That's the disappointment.
That would be nice.
Yeah, we're all in separate places. We obviously want to talk to you a ton about the Cavs and this year's team and resurgence, which is one of the best stories in the NBA. There's a ton of great stories in the NBA, whether it's the Bulls, Klay coming back. The Lakers are a fascinating story. We're gonna get to that probably as well. But the one thing I've noticed in watching the Cavs from the past three seasons is that it looks like fun, and it looks like you yourself are having a ton of fun this season.
Oh, I really am. I mean, in a big way, you know, this team has, you know, it's like, I felt the same way. Like after watching the Last Dance, like I want to go to the gym. I get excited about going to the gym. I want to show up there and I want to put in work and I want to build something. And these guys, you know, make me excited to come to work. We all celebrate each other. We've developed a culture. We didn't force it. It just has happened. Our communication is very high level. And that starts with JB. He's just a very effective and high level communicator for what we want to get done. And then I mentioned like those guys, everybody just celebrating each other from JA to, you know, young Ev to Darius making the next step, and really just everybody coming in and sharing the wealth. We're like the biggest share the wealth team in the NBA. We just want to see everybody shine. And I got to say, outside of 15, 16, I was talking to Channing about this. Like, I don't know that I've had more fun in the NBA than now, and watching these guys grow and getting to be a leader in that sense as well. Because this team wants to be led. They want to do something special. They want the recognition. I should say they want the respect. And I think it's just a beautiful brand of basketball that we're playing. It's fun. It's like really, really fun to be around. Listen, winning solves a lot of things. Like I felt like an angry veteran the last, you know, few years. And obviously that showed, and I had some not so great moments, some good moments, but like, this is what the NBA is meant to be. Like, this is a special moment. People are seeing it from, you know, a chip shot or 10,000 feet looking down on it. But, you know, it's real. Like our unit is incredibly cohesive, and, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see within our organization, how these guys are taking the steps and not skipping any.
Tommy, I want to let you jump in 1 second. I just have a quick follow-up on that, 'cause this is something I sort of wanted to bring up, and that's just having gone through being an all-star and being a number one option in Minnesota, then playing in four straight finals with LeBron, winning a championship. And I looked up the records, 19 and 63, 19 and 46, 22 and 50. Those are your last three seasons. And we touched on this a bit the last time you were on the show, but to be in the position you're in today on this team, 27 and 18, a game and a half out of first place, the perspective you sort of have now on those 3 years, what you went through, what the organization went through, what you would have done different, maybe. Just can you talk a little bit about that? That sort of that maturation that you're speaking of as a leader.
Yeah, I mean that's a great question, and you know, I haven't really had to answer that, and I've tried to like deflect all the praise or anything that's going good onto these guys because they've been so great in just how they are respecting the entire process, as I said earlier. But you know, I look back at my life in general, but you know, basketball career, I'm sure you've done a lot of reflection being on the other side now, just like things I would have done differently. People are like, oh, I don't regret anything. I wouldn't have changed anything. It's like, okay, bullshit. Like there are things I would have done differently. You know, I think a lot of times either my emotions got the best of me. You know, I said things without just digesting and, you know, reflecting on what had just happened and just moments of, you know, maturation and growth. But I'm at the same time, yeah, I may regret those things, but I'm thankful that they happened because I think I'm a better communicator, leader, fiance, like, you know, all that stuff across the board. And I think it's helped me to be an extension of the coaching staff with JB, having just with me and him, it being so much bigger than basketball. Like he's basically like an extension of my family. Our families go back to like the 70s when my dad played in the league and he knew Bernie. So I think all of that has more than anything, just helped me just not only buy into this team, but be that guy that can help lead the way, make a huge impact off the bench, be super efficient in 20 to 25 minutes a night, and just try and get the best out of these guys. Cause I have seen a lot in this league. I've been to the mountaintop. I've also been, like you said, with the Cavs, but also, you know, with the Timberwolves that were rebuilding for so long, I've been on both sides of that. So when you have something special like this, you just try and bottle it up and say, okay, how can we just get everything we can out of this? And you're seeing guys like J.A., Jared Allen is an all-star this year. Darius Garland has made the next step. He's an all-star this year. I mean, these guys are playing at a very high level. We got the rookie of the year. We got Isaac Okoro. I mean, obviously Colin Sexton and Ricky went down, but we have, you know, different guys throughout our entire lineup that are stepping up, and it's been amazing. And we have 3 7-footers in there with Lowry Markkanen, if you had hit. Like, we're going against the grain, doing stuff different. Our defensive schemes are different than anybody else is doing in the league. And then just our bench has been amazing as well. Like, I'm having a hard time staying in my lane of where I want to answer this, because it's like, guys, just it's refreshing to see them chase the game and watching everything else chase them right back. It's really a beautiful thing.
I was going to ask, speaking of unselfish, you mentioned Darius. What are your – we've talked about this a bunch sort of like offline. Where he is right now – you know, as a young player in this league and where he's going, what are sort of like your initial thoughts after the last 4 months? Because the jump he's taken has been pretty amazing to watch from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think his belief system has just gone through the roof. I mean, that was something that I probably should have mentioned about myself. Like, it never faltered even when I was, you know, hurt, or, you know, we were losing games, or, you know, I was never defined by what other people say I am or thought I was or that sort of thing. Like, I know who I am. I'm comfortable in my own skin, and, you know, just trying to do right by these guys. And I think seeing Darius mature, and I mean, that's like my little brother, like, and I should say my young brother. I mean, he's like such a smart, heady point guard, but he can play really both positions out there. If you need him to score, if you need him to create a shot for somebody, if you need him to play downhill, if you need an isolation, like, he does so many things to help us win still that don't show up in the stat sheet. And he's gotten better defensively. Like I mentioned, he's very smart. He has our schemes down. He wants to lock in. He wants to take that next step in a very big way. But I think that belief system in him, like, his confidence has continued to grow and understand how big of an impact he can have in this league, especially at that position that is just so hard. Like, I saw him go up against Kyrie last night, and we were talking about this morning, like, he has so much respect for how great of a basketball player Kyrie is. But I, you know, I'm almost like, Darius, like, you went toe to toe with one of the absolute best point guards of the last, you know, 10, 20 years. And you were amazing. I mean, you helped us win that game in a major way. And he continues to prove it. He continues to make that next step. And it's, I think he also is understanding, even when he doesn't have a great scoring game or he doesn't shoot great from the field, like in Utah, he was still able to impact the game and win us the game in a number of ways. I mean, he had a triple-double, his first of his career. And, you know, he had crazy assists. He was getting rebounds and doing all the other things that, you know, people are going to look back and say, yeah, he got a triple-double. But it was the little things that helped put us over the top. And he's really accepting that leadership role and using his voice. It's just an accumulation of everything across the board that Darius is doing. And honestly, with this group, sky's the limit.
What's been most impressive to me as a very young point guard still in the NBA, I know he's in his third year, but he's still very young, is the efficiency.
Yeah.
People will look at his counting numbers, which are very good, a little under 20 points a game, a little over 7 assists a game. But it's the efficiency to me and the growth he's taken. You know, he's had his rookie year, I looked it up, his assist percentage was 18. And he's doubled that. He's kept his turnover percentage the same while doing that. He's averaging a career high, above league average, true shooting percentage. His net rating is 9 points better when he's on the floor for you guys. Like, there's just so much that he's doing, as you said, that affects winning.
Yeah.
And you give young guys sometimes, not all the time, but you give young guys the ball in their hands and say, go play basketball. And that doesn't always happen.
No.
It's winning basketball. Like, he's putting up numbers on a good team at that age. That's the most impressive thing. It's efficient winning basketball that he's doing in his third year.
And he's consistently making the right play. And what I've seen a lot from him too is the game has started to really slow down with him. And his decision making is very, very high level. So when he's out there, whether it's, you know, getting us settled in the first quarter, the third quarter, or last 2, 4, 6 minutes of a game, like, his decision making is extremely high level. And there really isn't, you know, much that he can't do, not only with the ball, but out there on the floor. So it's, to me, he's still, and I think to everybody, like, he's, you know, until you reach, you know, 5 years in the league and you're 24, 25, 26 years old and start to be like a veteran, that, you grow into your body, your decision-making is, you know, you've gone around the league so many different times and you're like, okay, I get it. I know what I have to do in order to be extremely effective in this league, but he's there and he's, you know, having, you know, hopefully having a playoff experience for this young group could and should and will be so amazing. So that's what I think, again, for me, it gets me excited to go to the gym and watching, you know, these guys, you know, grow. Cause I have like a new perspective on, you know, how great of a group that we have and where we could go. I think it's just it's a beautiful thing. It's hard to put into words.
So what about Mobley? And I asked this in part, you know, just your observations playing with him, but also your games are different, but you know, you were a rookie big man who came in and, you know, had a lot of success very early on. And so are you talking to him at all about, you know, your experiences and also like just from a pure basketball standpoint, what do you see? Cause it really seems like he can do everything, which is pretty crazy for someone who's played as little as he has.
Yeah. I mean, you look at him and he passes the eye test. He, you know, again, is another guy that just turned 20 years old, hasn't fully like grown into his body, but it's funny in watching him and seeing that he has everything. He's going to be, you know, a top player in this league. I don't want to put a ceiling on him because I think there is no ceiling. He can be as good as he wants to be. So I don't want to say top 5, top 10 player, but the funny thing is to me, what I'm getting at is like, you know, you look and you're like, okay, he can face up, he can put it on the floor. You know, he's going to be capable of shooting threes. How good of a shooter will he be? you know, we'll see, but block shots defensively, he's so long. He can do everything, he can move his feet. He can guard one through five, but he wants to, like, when he faces up, like, he wants to bang. And that's like, I'm looking, I'm like, he really wants to, like, put a guy in the basket. And that was something that really surprised me about Ev, is like, he wants to, he is not afraid of the physicality. He's not afraid to take it to you. And he just, it's really impressive to see the shots that he's able to make this early in his career, and his decision-making, his poise, his calm demeanor. He has that quiet confidence about him. And just watching, he mentioned these three guys, but J.A., Ev, and Darius play together has been an amazing thing to watch those guys grow.
If you've been following the pod, you know I'm stepping my suit game up as I'm calling more and more games. So shout out Indochino for getting me all prepared for this home stretch of games. It's also wedding season, so you can get in on looking great. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into the wedding season looking like $1 million, even though the suits start at just $499. You can either book an appointment at one of their showrooms or do what I did and set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website and choose customizations without even leaving the house. I just ordered a nice plum suit with pinstripes. I'm trying to tap into my inner Walt Frazier, and I think it's working. The entire process was super simple, and the suit fits great. That's the sweet spot. So look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code OLDMAN to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code OLDMAN. If you're like me and appreciate great quality, easy-to-wear clothes in your closet, let me introduce you to Rails. They're a Los Angeles-based brand that blends their California roots with an elevated European aesthetic, and the fabrics feel as good as they look. From super luxe button-downs and essential outerwear to vacation-ready shorts and tees, Rails is consciously crafted for the modern man on the move. With the sun coming out, I recently got myself a few short sleeve button downs, and they are super light and comfortable. Try Rails for yourself at their flagship stores in New York, San Francisco, Boston, London, Paris, and beyond, or at rails.com. And take 15% off your order with the code JJ. That's 15% off with code JJ at rails.com.
I know you don't want to put a ceiling on them, and comparisons, they generally suck.
Yeah.
But who does Evan remind you of?
Who does Evan remind me of? It's tough for me. I mean, obviously, you know, in temperament and how they go about their business is different. But like, I think in being 7 feet tall, being able to play that mid-range, block shots, play both sides of the ball, you know, energetic, elastic, like, you know, KG is somebody that I see at that size and body type. But I don't know, man. I'm curious to what other people have said about that, because I think that the game has changed so much. But there's nothing really he's not going to be able to do. I think in 2 or 3 years, you're going to see him at the very, very top of the league in terms of players. But comparisons, yeah, they're hard. Like you said, it's hard to do.
Yeah. And I literally was not trying to put you in a tough spot.
No, I know.
The reason I was asking was because when he first when the season first started, and you watch him play and you look at how he moves, and as you said, he's still growing into his body a little bit.
Yeah.
Everybody was comparing him to Chris Bosh, which is fine. I heard a lot of Chris Bosh comparisons.
Yeah.
But the KG thing is interesting because defensively, what Evan is able to do in both protecting the paint and being able – and look, Chris Bosh was a terrific defender. I'm not knocking Chris Bosh's defense. But what Evan is able to do on that side of the ball is very unique and very valuable. I spent one day watching, I think, 18 straight minutes of him switching onto guards and getting stops.
Yeah.
And this was like 6 weeks ago. I mean, this was early in the season, and he had a lot of stops switching onto guards and staying down and contesting late and blocking at the – I mean, it's just – that to me is the value there. There's just not a lot of bigs at his size that can be a force inside while also switching on the perimeter.
Yeah, and to that point, you know, sometimes when we go zone, or, you know, if we're switching 3-5 or 2-5, you know, he ends up at the top of the key. And you used to see that a lot at the very least when KG was on the Timberwolves, you would always see him kind of at the top there, just showing length, contesting guards, sometimes guarding the three man, sometimes guarding the two man. But I think that's also the luxury that we have having Lowry and JA down there. Cause if you're funneling them into the paint, you know, you're going to meet those two bigs on the other side. So, no, I think, listen, the growth has been fast for him. I think it's also very hard as a rookie to do it on a winning team. So I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great
accounting
point.
For all of that.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it makes for, you know, a pretty special season for him, and a guy that I truly believe, again, sky's the limit, but, you know, in the space that we're in right now and current day, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. If he continues this, he's going to be the rookie of the year.
Yeah. You've brought up the big lineup a few times. I wanted to touch on this because it sort of bucks the trend of anything happening in the NBA, or at least in recent memory happening in the NBA. You know, there's certainly always going to be value in a guy like Jared Allen that can rebound at a high level, play in drop coverage, protect the paint. Then you add in Mobley, you add in Markkanen, and you sort of mentioned what you guys do differently, specifically on that side of the ball, because you've built a top five level defense this season.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing that's different scheme wise than what other teams are doing?
Yeah, I think it's, again, I think that what makes us different is just that luxury of, you know, those three bigs and then being able to cover for each other. When you are able to switch 3 7-footers every ball screen that they're in, it's incredibly impressive to watch and to just to see a shot go up and you're like, okay, you know, we have so much size in there, so much length. But I, to get back to answering your question, I guess what we do most is like the bigs all cover for each other. And, you know, we have certain shot profiles like each team has, but where we're going to get the most, you know, the effective field goal percentage is going to be down. You know, we're getting guys into our shot profile where we want them to take shots from, and understanding that, you know, at the end of the day, our back line of defense is all predicated on, you know, the bigs covering for each other. And the guards obviously have to do their part, and they're going to have to, you know, either switch out, they're going to might end up on somebody bigger than themselves, or, you know, they're going to have to be an X man really at all times playing in that high quadrant. But I, you know, don't want to give away all the secrets, but it's basically predicated on, you know, the fours and fives, and if Lowry's playing the three, all protecting each other at all times.
Were you surprised initially when this lineup started having success?
You know, that's tough to, I don't know.
And that's not a knock on the personnel, I guess. I guess because
no, but because of the personnel,
the sound of it sounds, or the idea of it sounds so foreign to NBA 2022.
It's just so against the grain in what we do now. It's like Rondo and I were talking about it. Well, actually, you know, it came up today too, where it was like a post-up league. So like when you first came in, and even when I first came in a couple of years after you, a few years after you, that the scores were still like 95-88 a lot of time. And like you're hitting the post and like you're throwing it into Powell. You know, they're setting the Chicago action. Lamar is setting the screen. Bynum's coming over the top and Powell's playing out of it. And like Kobe's catching it. That's just not the game anymore. So like, you know, it's pace and space. It's small ball. And it's, can you shoot 30 to 40, maybe even 50 threes, you know, a game? And it's either you're in the paint or you're shooting threes. So like, and you know, what do the analytics say? But for us, we went against the grain. I think you mentioned personnel, especially with Lowry out there being able to be a dynamic, not only defender, but he can shoot the ball. He's very skilled, and he just brings, you know, a whole different look to our offensive and defensive lineup. Again, Ev, super skilled, can play out to 17 feet, can knock down a three at this point. And then, you know, JA just is one of the most efficient and consistent guys in the entire league. So in some ways I'm not surprised because so much of what we do on the offensive end is dictated what we do on defense. And defensively, we have the ability to be great. And I still think there's levels to this of you know, how far we can take our defense.
Analytics work if you have the personnel to make analytics work. So it's great if
amen.
Hey, let's shoot 45 threes, but if you have a bunch of non-shooters, it's probably not that efficient. And so, you know, obviously you're not going to give away the secrets, but a ton of credit to JB in sort of figuring out how do we make a defensive scheme that plays to our strengths and also plays to our best players. Again, those three guys have started every game that they've played. So they've had that. I think Lowry has the least amount of starts or games played. So you guys have played that lineup, starting lineup, 36 times this season.
And I would bet you that when those three or four guys play together, I can imagine, you know, whatever the analytics say, it's got to be very, very high level. But I don't really fall into, you know, we're basketball players. That's not really what we do.
Wait a minute. So you don't look at numbers? I mean, you probably look at like how much is Joel Embiid averaging occasionally or something like that. But do you look at your own team's statistics?
Yeah. Yeah. So we have like our goals that we want to accomplish, and there's numbers on there, and you know how many times we hit ahead, you know, contested shots, contested threes, 3-point percentage, points in the paint. Like there's stuff like that I believe really matters. I feel like, you know, there's some advanced statistics that really matter. Like, you know, guys that are on the floor together, understanding what the best lineups are, how long can we put them on the floor? You know, what their offensive and defensive rating is when they're on the floor together, what kind of success they have, if there's other lineups that work better, when to put them in the game. So I think that helps JB kind of, you know, dictate, you know, how the game flow is going to go. And I think it's going to help us long term, you know, come playoff time as well.
Kev, what's your feeling on the parity of the East right now? Do you feel like the you guys in the Bulls?
East is good, man.
Are you guys still sneaking up on people, or are people like, oh, no, we know when we go to Cleveland what we're getting now, and you're still winning?
Well, we just got our first ESPN game today, so I guess
they figured it out.
Hey, yeah, Kev, I did NBA today. We talked about you guys for a hot 20 seconds. That's
there you
good.
Go. Hey, we're getting, you know, it's better than
January.
Just mentioning our name, I guess. No, but I think us flying under the radar is, you know, we want our respect. We want to earn it. And we don't feel like we're there. We still feel like there's, again, more levels to this. And if we're flying under the radar, good. We don't really have anybody that is like, you know, is wanting to take the credit. We're all like, no, it's these guys. Like, I'm just part of this. I'm part of this culture. I'm part of this. It's all about the team. And it's contagious in that way. So it's again, I keep saying it's a beautiful thing. It just feels like a share the wealth kind of team, but at the same time, you're going to need, you know, we do have those guys that, you know, if you need to go get you a bucket or need to go get you a stop, we have that. It's not like one of those things where, you know, they don't have a number one or number two that can, you know, go get you a basket in crunch time and playoff time when it's half court. Like we do have that, and we have the makings of a really good team. We just, you know, obviously things have to go on our side, like, you know, health. You know, we got to have guys, you know, in the rotation, in the lineup, and just continuing to grow together is the biggest thing. You mentioned, you know, parity, continuity, all that stuff. We got to have that with a young team.
Speaking of advanced stats, you guys have the fourth best net rating in the entire NBA, the best in the East. And that generally is the biggest indicator of how good a team is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's some luck involved at the end of the games, but if you're constantly beating teams by a big margin, you're a really good basketball team. You're a really good basketball team. OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear.
everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at vuori.com/JJ. That's vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I want to get to sort of your evolution as a player. I actually didn't realize this. So there was a game in, I think, 2018, 2019 that you came off the bench. But prior to that, and after that, up until this season, you had started every game pretty much since 2009, 2010. So you'd been a full-time starter for basically 11 seasons in the NBA. When did you kind of get the sense that you were going to come off the bench this year? And that initial, not necessarily initial reaction, but that initial period of time and sort of getting into a rhythm. Because again, like you mentioned, you're having either your most or your second most efficient season. Your numbers back that up. So how long did that sort of period take to get comfortable with this idea and then comfortable on the court?
Yeah, I think the rhythm was definitely the hardest thing. But as far as, you know, accepting that kind of six-man role, JB was super transparent with me. I mean, it was we had a number of conversations leading up to me getting to Cleveland. We sat down when I got to Cleveland, just kind of broke down how everything looked in his office. And again, like I trust in JB. Like it's bigger than basketball with us. So like I was to the mindset of, I think this could be, a big moment for this team and for this franchise. And we have young stars, and on paper, we look actually really good. I said to myself, like, you know, sacrifice, you know, could this sacrifice could really give back more than it costs, you know? And at this point, in my career, he told me I'm still going to get a good amount of minutes. So I'm like, man, if I can, you know, kind of pivot where my career is at, have zero expectations going into it other than to just go out there and play hard 20, 25 minutes a night and help lead this team. And I think, as you know, and if you've seen in your career, like leadership takes many different forms. And I'm just trying to help this team stay the course, continue to grow, and be an extension of what JB is doing. Continue to ask questions, speak to guys, ask what they need, lead by example. You know, I like to keep it loose at some moments, making sure guys are having fun, enjoying the process, enjoying off the court as well. So for me, it's just been really fun to play and go in and out of, you know, playing with the starting unit, playing with our guys coming off the bench, and just be like a very steady veteran that's, you know, been the highest of highs and also lowest of lows. Cause, you know, I think now in my 14th year, in my eighth season with the Cavs, like I know what it takes to win. So if I can just impart whatever I need to do to help this team, I'm going to do that. And it's been really fun for me to go out there and do that and be efficient and score and shoot threes and play pick and roll with the guys. Defensively, just play really great team defense, rebound the basketball. I mean, just basically be myself when I'm out there. And I think that's what JB wanted me to do. He said, just go be Kevin Love. And that's honestly what I've tried to do. I know that sounds simplified, but for me, that's just been the case. Just being myself and being comfortable in my own skin and just being a part of this, you know, something that's bigger than myself.
Kev, what was the first Clay game like for you?
Emotional. You know, my best friend that I grew up with was in town as well from back in Portland, and we grew up with Clay. And just seeing, you know, Mikey, who is my friend first, his older brother, seeing his mom, Julie, seeing Trace for the first time. Big Mike wasn't there because he was with the Lakers. But just seeing them post-game, you know, getting the hug from Clay before the game. I mean, it just, again, it's one of those moments that I'll always remember because it was like 900 and something odd days of not playing basketball. And like the game is better with him. I know we had a lot of battles and, you know, he's had this unbelievable Hall of Fame career, top 75 career. But you know,
top 77.
He's top 75. Like you said, Dolph Shays isn't going to be. You know, no disrespect.
Don't get him started on this.
Yeah, I know. How many points would Klay Thompson have had in the 50s?
Oh, my God.
So.
I don't want to interrupt. I don't know why you said Dolph Shays. Now I have to go off on a tangent real quick. NBA official account put up this graphic the other day celebrating, you know, they're celebrating all the top 75 players.
Of course,
players.
Yeah, I've seen it. The one on Kevin McHale the other day, I was watching like 300 post moves in 30 seconds. It was fantastic.
They put up this this thing with Dolph Shays, celebrating Dolph Shays. And the tagline or the caption on it was, Dolph Shays, one of the best shooting big men of all time. And again, I'll mention this again. My issue with this is that Dolph Shays, for his career, shot 38% from the field. So I'm not sure how he qualified.
He shot 38% from the field for his career?
For his career. Did you know that Bob Cousy never shot over 40% from the field in his career? Didn't have one season.
Dolph Shays' family is going to murder JJ at some point. He's like the one man slander.
Anyways, as you were saying about Clay, the top 77 guy.
Yeah. No, and so like, I don't know. There was so many emotions, like not making it about myself, but just seeing him back out there on the floor just made me really happy. And I think, you know, at this stage in his career, to get back with that team, to be in the new arena, to get back with Dre and Steph and Kerr, and just, he's such a big part of that organization. It just, I mean, I was up like literally a half court when he made his first bucket, like so happy for him. I told him that's the only fucking one I'm cheering for though. And then after the game, you know, he came and gave me a big hug. We talked for a minute, got to see his family. It's just like, I mean, I'm sure for him it was, you know, very emotional, but just to see a friend and somebody that you grew up with and watch grow, you know, not only have success in coming back, but just, you know, lacing him up and doing what he loves again was just a great moment that I didn't certainly take for granted. I obviously know that he didn't, but a lot of people you know, respect the time that he put into to get back to being Clay.
A little perspective. All right, again, I hate using the word ceiling, and so I'm not going to use it. And you mentioned the word belief when you were talking about sort of personal belief, but your team is like, again, you're the fourth best point differential. You're the third best defense. You have what I think you have two all-stars on the team this year. I think J.A. should be an all-star. I think Darius Garland should be all-star. I think J.B. Bickerstaff should be in the running for coach of the year. Evan Mobley should be in the running for rookie of the year. And fuck it, man. You should be in the running for sixth man of the year.
So you got this old man of the three campaign.
Yes.
And as Tommy mentioned, yeah, we're going to start hyping you up about this now. As Tommy mentioned, there's a bunch of good teams in the East. And I've gone, I don't want to say on record, but I've basically said, look, I think at full strength, you know, it's the Bucks, the Nets, the Miami Heat, and Philly, if they decide to do anything with Ben, if they just get a couple good players back. I think at full strength, those are the four best teams. And that's not taking anything away from what you guys have done, and that's not taking anything away from what the Bulls have done. So what does noise look like in the playoffs for Cavs? Like, what is a run that would, I don't want to set you up, but like, what is disappointment? What is, hey, we kind of maxed out in terms of our potential?
Yeah, I mean, I think we like to see the wall and break through it. I saw something funny today. I think even the Cavs posted it. Like, we were, you know, slated to win like 25 or 26 games. And we're sitting here just past the halfway point and have more wins than was predicted by everybody. But like, I honestly think success in the playoffs for us is the experience, whether it's getting, you know, to the first round, to the semis, to the conference final, like no matter what it is, that experience is going to create even more hunger, you know, and it's to get to, you know, that next level to, you know, feel what the conference finals are like, to feel what the level of playing in the NBA finals is like. Like it's like, what did Jordan say in the documentary? It's like a drug, right? Like we want to not only get back there, but again, you mentioned the ceiling, like blow the roof off. Like that's what we want. But I think the experience, not to pivot away from your question, is what we need, what we want. And I think that is success in itself. But again, I think there's very good teams in the East. Those teams that you mentioned are very good teams at full strength. So we're going to need to, you know, touch wood, knock wood, continue to be healthy, continue to trend in the right direction. But, you know, I think success for us is to end up anywhere within that 1-6, you know, and making the playoffs outright. And then from there, it's just, you know, let the chips fall and, you know, hopefully we have a favorable matchup and how we match up with the other team and see what happens from there.
I actually don't think you pivoted at all. I think that was a very direct answer, and I think it was a great answer.
You're on the other side now. No, but so listen, like, you are asking questions that, like, you know, could go one way, Tommy, get this
thought
guy.
We were friends.
He's asking
the show,
tough
man.
Questions. He's a tough knows, question. I'm he just, knows how to get dude, good responses.
Kevin has been on. Kevin has been on really bad teams, and he's been on a championship. He's won a championship. Like, he knows what a good team is. He knows what an okay team is. It's a fair question. It's a fair question that I'm asking a friend, and now he's turning on me because I'm a member of the media, apparently.
listen, you gotta keep him at somewhat of a distance. You know what I'm saying?
It was a great answer. It was a very good answer.
I think the thing you touched on, and again, I'm not knocking your team. I think we've basically sung your praises for 40 minutes here, but I think the value of the experience is so important. And when you look at the teams I mentioned, either the teams themselves, their core groups, or players on those teams have that experience, and it is invaluable. But you know, you can't learn it, you can't have it, you can't learn from it until you go through it. And I'm super excited to see your team in the playoffs, whatever round it is, or if you make it to the finals. Like it is so valuable to have that.
Yeah. I mean, we're not putting any sort of crazy expectation on ourselves. I think it's, again, like, you know, you can't skip the steps in the process, and we're taking it really all in stride, but that's a testament to like our character, JB, our organization. We've collectively done a great job of keeping the main thing and focusing on now. I mean, one of the hardest things to do in life is to stay present. I feel like this group is pretty damn good at that.
All right, before we get to the draft, I do have one last question. And
is it a Dolph Schayes question?
No, this is not a Dolph Schayes question. But you watch the NBA, and we players, teams, the media, we all talk about the Lakers because they have the greatest player of our generation and one of the all-time greats. I'm not going to compare eras or players in that regard, but I think LeBron is the greatest player of our generation.
Shot over 40% in his career.
He has shot over 40%. Highly, highly efficient, that LeBron James. And I'm just curious from your perspective. You're friends with Russ, you know, friends with LeBron, we're his teammate. And because it's the Lakers and because it's LeBron, like the amount of scrutiny that those guys have to deal with, is it fair? Is it unfair? Is it spot on? What's your sort of perspective on it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that Bron has like a gravitational pull, right? Like everybody, the media, you know, people that love him, people that hate him, people that love the Lakers, hate the Lakers, all media, I mentioned that already, but like everybody just like focuses on that. So any step in the wrong direction, people are just going to like take that and just keep just grinding away on it. And it's tough. I mean, it's obviously a massive media market. Everybody expects the Lakers to do great things, especially with having a big three, with, you know, even with AD being out, they expect big things from them. But, it's tough. Like, you know, I played with Bron and, you know, we were under a lot of scrutiny as well in Cleveland, and we had great expectations and people were saying, you know, finals or championship or bust. So with that, yeah, every little misstep or you lose three in a row or you're hovering around 500, it's just, you know, a dozen different storylines. It's a soap opera, you know, people always got to have stuff to talk about, you know, 24/7, 365 media presence and different storylines. If not, it's, you know, you're not going to get your ratings. People aren't going to watch the show. I mean, it's just a fact.
No, that's why I asked you. That's literally the reason I asked you. You live that.
You could tell by the SportsCenter Instagram of how much they put LeBron up, no matter what happens with him,
yeah. That
it's a numbers thing.
No, it's totally a numbers thing. And I mean, listen, JJ said he's the greatest player of our generation and in the GOAT talks, like, you know, and people are going to follow his every move. So his team, if somebody's not performing or somebody is, you know, messing up, you know, the Lakers season, so they say, then, you know, they're going to be the scapegoat. And listen, with AD out, would things likely be going different for us? I think so. I think, you know, if AD comes back and he's healthy and motivated, he takes that team obviously to a different stratosphere. I think Russ plays better. I think Bron continues to play the way that he does because it opens up, you know, so many different things for him. But I would be surprised if they figure it out, you know, I would say all-star break and after all-star break. I do feel like they will make some noise. How far they will go, I don't know. But, you know, I think, you know, some of the expectation and the scrutiny is I'm not going to say unwarranted, but in some ways unfair because you got to see how it plays out. We've been in a situation before where, you know, we made the finals and we were – I forget our record, but there were times where it wasn't pretty.
That 2018 team, and you guys made a bunch of changes.
Correct.
That was the year Kyrie left. You got off to a terrible start. You made changes.
Huge expectation.
Yeah.
Huge expectation.
Sure.
With, you know, a bunch of very talented, you know, some Hall of Fame guys on the team, guys that in different situations were amazing. But again, it's like, you know, it doesn't, just because you look good on paper doesn't mean it's going to work in your favor. So, you know, a little tough for me to, you know, understand what's going on there. Cause I'm not within the group, but you know, I think you can't throw all, you know, one bunch of guys together in 1 year or excuse me, half a season, figure it out. And it's not going to be, what were they going to be, the first seed? No. Second seed? Probably not. Third seed, who knows, but like make the playoffs, matchups, you know, how it breaks down within the teams that make it on your side, you just never know. So,
yeah, I think to your point about AD, you know, LeBron has missed, I think, 12 games.
Yeah.
I think AD's missed like 17 or I don't know, I think 17, something like that. And then they just have a weirdly kind of constructed roster. But
yes,
I said this a couple weeks ago to somebody, I can't remember who, and I'm like, there is a version in my mind where they figure out how to spread the floor, sort of like the Rockets bubble team, that 2020 team, where they went just super small and put PJ Tucker at the five and just gave Russ space to be Russ. And that team turned the corner and had a ton of success. Russ was fantastic the last few months of the season. Like, there's a scenario to me where they do turn this thing around, because look, they have those three guys, and those three guys are great players. Yeah,
it's definitely there. Yeah. That's why I'm saying it's there somewhere. I just think it's been it's been ugly. There's no reason that team with that talent level, and you said it is oddly a constructed team or an oddly constructed team, but there's something in there that could and should work. At what capacity, I don't know, but you know, I do think that they're able to beat any team in the league on any given night. Now, in a 7-game series, we'll have to wait and see.
Three, two, one, liftoff.
Top 5. All right, let's get to the Old Man and Three draft. Tommy reminded me yesterday that Kevin has Kevin's sort of mopped us in the first two times doing this draft with us. So
did I?
We did two movie drafts
with you, and you
two movie drafts.
You wiped the.
I don't know if I mopped you guys, but
this time we're not doing movies.
I do think that the call that Tommy had was Citizen Kane was just. I still have days where I think about that.
That's one of the greatest callbacks to like episode 6. I don't even remember where.
Still, I was really upset.
One of the greatest moments.
You didn't talk
on the
to
show.
Me for 2 months after that.
No, that was a noble. That was I was upset. I love Citizen Kane. That's a great movie.
All right, Tommy. Draft topic.
Topic: worst thing someone can do on a plane.
Who's up first?
You're first, and we snake it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been around, I want to say like belligerently drunk, but like just, I don't like shitty people. And when they're like really awful to a flight attendant, and I've seen it, it just makes me, so mad. So like just very, very rude to a flight attendant is not.
Okay.
Not it.
Mistreatment of a flight attendant, I think, is a general rule. We can all agree, like, we should just get on an airplane and sort of just respect other people. That's what it comes down to. Sure. So I like that pick a lot.
Catering to you to make your travel from one destination to another, like, just easy. They're trying their best to make it stress-free. They're in the service. Like, they're – so to treat them like shit or to treat any – you know, waiter or servo, like, it just, that makes me so pissed off. That like tells somebody like your true character, I feel like.
Yeah.
Okay. Good pick.
So, yeah.
All right. I'm up.
Yep.
I'm picking when somebody, male or female, is sitting in front of you and they have long hair and they put the hair, right? They don't have a ponytail on and they put the hair over their seat and it ends up around your face.
Yeah.
In some capacity, whether or not it's touching you or not, you can see the hair in front of you in your own personal space. It's not a common thing. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen. And it's extremely awkward because you don't want to pull the other person's hair. You don't want to touch someone's hair. That's really rude to do. You don't want to kick their seat and say, you know, move your hair. But you're also literally encroaching on somebody else's personal space. And so basically, long story short, if you have really long hair, if you're a man or a woman, make sure that that hair is in your own personal space and not in someone else's personal space.
I literally did not know that this was a thing. I didn't know.
It's not a common thing. I think it's only happened to me maybe once or twice. It's not like it happens, and it's not like it happens all the time, but when it happens, it's really disgusting. It's like your thing with feet, but imagine someone is putting their feet on your lap while you're trying to sit.
That's a great pick.
Here's the thing about this entire draft. I feel like a lot of these picks are going to have some form of hygiene related malpractice involved. I think that's what it comes down to.
But it makes sense because you're in a small container with other people, basically, where you can't walk off the plane in the middle of the flight. You know, if right. you're on a bus or something like that, you can get off if someone is being weird sitting next to you. You can't do that on the plane. So you're kind of signing up for some level of common courtesy about, you know, how you treat the people next
personally,
to you.
If I had long hair, personally, I don't want my hair, the back of my head, to touch the back of a seat anyways. Like it's
And I also definitely don't want it to be swinging around that long where you don't know where it is. Like that feels like you would get it stuck in some sort of seat and it would be really embarrassing for you. Like I think it's not a thing. I think most people get it, but there's definitely, you know, Reddit threads and stuff like that of people doing this. And I think it leads to the always uncomfortable situation of like, you don't really want to talk to other people on the plane. You don't want to chide them for their habits, but this is unavoidable. This is like move your hair.
Agree. Okay. Most annoying things people do. I mean, the obvious one to me, because I tweeted about this the other day, but I have a real problem with people taking their shoes off on a plane.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, I understand difference between, look, somebody could take their shoes off and have socks on. Somebody could take their shoes off and be barefoot. And they could do both of those scenarios with flip-flops on. But flip-flops are a form of shoes. There's just a level of disrespect to me by taking your shoes off on an airplane. It's not your fucking living room. Now, the exception to this, of course, if you happen to be on an overseas overnight flight where everybody's sort of trying to get comfortable and sleep, that's just wear clean socks, thick yes. clean socks, of course.
The socks matters a lot, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but there's the feet, I just think it's gross and we're not in your fucking living room, all right? All right, second one is anyone who talks to me on an airplane, just don't talk to me. I'm not on an airplane, I'm not traveling to make friends. Generally, I'm traveling with a friend or a wife. And if I'm traveling solo, a lot of times I want to read a book, I want to read my magazine. Yep. Don't be a distraction to that. I don't want
to
make a friend
on
an airplane.
How about talk to you with your headphones on too?
Yeah, it's
like,
the
you're
worst.
Like, you're like, wait, what?
It's the worst.
Wait, what?
You guys also probably have it way worse because people recognize you all the time, which makes it's bad enough to do this for anybody, but when you get spotted.
I'm not like Kevin. I fly commercial flights. Okay.
I will piggyback off of that. Yeah. Right. Jesus Christ, guys.
All right. What am I? Second pick? Bringing stinky food on to eat.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Especially fish, but any kind of food. Any food that has any sort of odor.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I always wondered, like, you know, some people have like crazy peanut allergies or different allergies, things like that. Like, if say I have that allergy and Kevin brings food on and sits next to me and I like get some of it on, like is there, do you think they would say like you can't bring certain types of food on a plane or something like that,
like peanut allergy type of thing?
Well, yeah. I always had this thought the other day because my son was eating, I think, a granola bar that had peanuts in it when we were flying down to North Carolina for the Duke game, and it was like an hour into the flight, but I remember being on a lot of commercial flights because I fly commercial, and generally speaking, if there's a peanut allergy, the person will go to the flight attendant and announce that, and the flight attendant will get on the intercom and say, hey, there's a very, you know, so yeah, someone on the plane has a peanut allergy. Please just be mindful of that.
Kevin, you got two picks.
I have two picks.
Yeah.
I
just thought about the fact, what if Kevin started this whole draft off with like,
it was all,
I only fly commercial, I don't have any picks.
Yeah, I mean, God, I hate it when there's not
when they get my order wrong from Carbone.
Yeah, don't have the catering right from Carbone on my private flight. What about, have you ever sat next to like a bathroom frequenter?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's the worst. I'm not saying like, okay, hour third, like every 30 minutes, like, excuse me, do you mind if I get up?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That aisle seat, if you have to use the bathroom, if you're just one of those people, just try your best not to book.
Try your best.
An aisle seat. A window or middle seat. Try your best to book an aisle seat.
Like very, very frequent to the bathroom. I've done that where it was probably a trip from LA to New York where I must have gotten up, yeah, 6 to 8 times, I'd say. Like every 45 minutes, every 40 minutes, somebody got up. And so that's, and I mean, this isn't like, I mean, JJ, I'm like, I'm either going to say like now, because it's going to be like no mask type of thing. Like somebody's just like, I'm just not going to wear it right now until the flight attendant tells me to. Or I've had this happen before where like people will just take their phone out and just take a picture of you or start recording.
Like to pick one. Those are both good picks. Take one of those though. Those are two different picks.
I'm saying though, like,
he's saying like people will do that now because you're not, somebody's not wearing a mask, but people just do that to him in general. Like,
okay.
The yeah, phone, yeah.
The phone. That's what I'm saying. So like, it's not really going to, you know.
Yeah. That's really annoying.
Yeah,
it doesn't like transcend like everybody.
Yeah. Right. No, that makes sense.
But I guess I could say like, I mean, JJ, you pretty much mentioned it, but like cleanliness in general, right? Like taking care of your space.
Yeah.
I mean, with the feet, that's kind of a similar thing, but you know, we're all in this compact compartment together, whether we're on,
it's a community, you know, it's a community.
It is. It's like you get to, you establish this community for anywhere from 30 minutes to however many hours if you're flying abroad, right? But say we're going across the country, say it's 6 hours, so 30 minutes to 6 hours. You have to keep your community clean. Okay, people. Like cleanliness is such a, it's like, it's not only self-respect, but you're respecting those around you as well.
Yeah.
So that would probably be my third pick.
Okay.
My third pick is similar to yours a little bit, Kevin. It's anyone who asks to switch, anyone who's in a middle seat and asks to switch to a non-middle seat for any reason, no matter what it is, is not acceptable. You could have planned that out ahead of time. Yeah, it happens all the time. And they're like, oh yeah. my grandmother, my this, da, da, da. Like, it doesn't matter. You could have planned that out. And you're basically inconveniencing another person and counting on them to be nice and magnanimous, basically, and give up a better thing to give you a worse thing for no reason.
I have a question on this for clarification purposes, because my wife and I, this ends up happening a lot to us where we make last second plans and we can't book seats next to each other. So we'll ask somebody, but I would never ask someone to give up a worse seat.
You know, it has to be equal. Equal seats are fine.
So I'm trading apples for apples. Yes. I'm booking a middle seat for me and an aisle seat for her, or I'm booking a middle seat and a window seat and aisle seat for you know, each of us so that I can trade for one and we can sit next to each other.
Yeah. You just have better feel, JJ.
I like that that's fine.
Better,
I like that,
that's fine.
I think trading is fine. Aisle for aisle, window for window is fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Okay. I got two.
Yep.
All right. This is a big one for me, and this happened the other day when I was flying back from Wyoming. There's a responsibility. I'm being serious. There's a real responsibility if you're sitting in a window seat to have proper shade control.
Yes.
And it's not hard. It's not hard. Look, if it's sunny out, on takeoff, put your shade down. If you're on an overnight flight and it's the morning, keep your shade down.
Common sense.
It's really just common sense.
Common sense.
Yep,
I don't care if you want to look out the window, but you're affecting everyone else on the plane. So you have a responsibility. So poor shade control. That's my third pick.
Honestly, and clouds aren't that exciting. No. Like, can we all agree with that?
Yes.
Yes.
We're taking photos of anything on the ground if it's not like the Grand Canyon.
I'm full agreement.
Look, I know it's
shade control. That is such a good pick.
I'm going to kind of combine two into one here, okay? And I have young kids. I have a 7-year-old and 5-year-old, and we've flown with them since they were toddlers, since they were babies. And so you don't have a lot of control over your children. But there's a couple scenarios. So I'm just going to say parental control is like the most annoying thing, or lack of parental control. And so there's a couple things, or three really, that kind of irk me. Number one is when your child is kicking the back of my seat. I don't care that your child is 5 years old. I literally don't. I just don't want the back of my seat to be kicked. Okay, so that's one thing. Then this is a phenomenon that I found out. We were traveling somewhere recently, and we happened to be in the 39th row. The four of us were just straight across in the 39th row, last row of the plane. And we were headed down to Florida right before Christmas to visit my in-laws. and there was probably 60 children on that flight, and 30 of them cried at some point in time during that flight, and everybody would bring their babies to the back of the plane. Like, I get that you don't want to upset the people you're sitting next to, but you're just upsetting a different group of people with the crying That's babies. Tough. And look, anybody who's had kids, my kids have cried on a plane. Don't move your baby. That's my point. You can't control whether or not your baby's crying, but don't bring it somewhere else. Don't bring it somewhere else. The person next to you understands that you can't control whether or not your baby's crying. Don't move the baby.
There's got to be zoning laws for that.
Yeah.
Dude, I was looking at all this stuff on the internet about annoying things people do on airplanes, and there was all these blogs about, like, can we please have a baby-free zone on an airplane?
Seriously. The quiet section?
It's the updated 2022 version of the no smoking zone.
The soundproof quiet zone?
Yeah. We just have peace and quiet zone, pick. Please. That's a great pick. JJ is crushing this.
JJ's
right now.
Crushing us. All right, my fourth pick is anyone who touches, who like moves your bag in the overhead for any reason, bag, coat, whatever it is. It's like if you don't get the space in the overhead, that's fine. And I understand that people sometimes take advantage of the overhead space and they will, you know, shove their coat and bag in and then close it and things like that. But there's just no reason to move someone else's thing.
Any sort of overhead bin abuse.
Yes.
Overhead bin abuse, yeah.
All right, Kevin, you got two. Close it out.
I have two?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Like, I'm out. I should have looked it up.
When they don't have Dasani water on the...
Oh, dude, no. By the way, I wouldn't give Dasani water to my dog. So much I hate Dasani. I like Coke. Don't drink it. But I like it. I would say I'm going to go with Larry David here and say this is kind of to JJ's point as well, factors into the cleanliness thing, but like shorts on a plane. Does that bother anybody? God.
It depends. Where you're going.
That's interesting. You don't want to see any skin, no lower leg extremity skin, basically.
Listen,
it is kind of grimy.
And I'm not like leg hair fat shaming anybody, but like if your open leg is going to touch me on a plane,
that's
you're right about this.
Yeah,
I don't care. You're right about this. That's
gross.
I had to
go in my bag for this one because I don't have anything else. But I think I had to go with the that was a Larry David, that was a Curb episode, so I'm going there with it. One more. Like looking around here, what do guys do on a plane? Don't sit next to Taco Fall when he falls asleep.
I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah, that was a real man. He's the best. He's so funny though. But like,
I think that's a great pick.
7'5", just like.
Dude, I think that should be your pick.
Yeah,
I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, the Taco Fall falling asleep on you is very unnerving.
All right.
Happened multiple times.
You might win for that pick, by the way. I hope you know.
Yeah.
After all that,
that's my sleeper pick. I'm glad I said that.
You might win for that.
There's a lot of people, Tommy, that can relate to that pick. I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Maybe like 20.
Just 9 people in the world.
Yeah, I love that pick. Just say, what really bothers me is just not flying private.
All right. I'm fifth pick. You guys are going to get mad at this, but or maybe you won't. I think it's really fucked up when people watch movies like Flight or Sully or any sort of movie.
Dude.
Why would that has any sort of really, you are on one today.
It's just a big plane foul. Like you just can't do that.
You can't.
Yeah, and by the way, sometimes they have those planes on in-home entertainment because they're good movies. You just can't watch them on a plane. So that's it. That's my fifth pick.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
All right. This one also has to do with talking, but we've all talked on our cell phone. We've been on the phone. We're getting ready to taxi. Somebody calls us. Maybe we're mid call when we start boarding, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, there's a responsibility. You're part of a community. I don't need to know what your company's May spreadsheet looks like. I don't fucking care. You can use volume control when you're on your cell phone. So lack of volume control when you're talking on your cell phone. That's my last pick annoyance.
Wait 5 minutes when you get off the plane. It's like, hey, can I call you in 5 minutes? I'm the same way. I just had this conversation about like players being on the bus. And it's like, okay, it doesn't matter. Like language barrier, don't care. Yeah. Like, again, it's all the same thing. I'm like, we're in this tight space. Can you just wait 20 minutes? Like, yeah. Is this something that like you have to FaceTime your niece the entire time we're on? Like, I love that you're doing it. I think it's great. You're keeping in touch with your family, but like, come on now.
Wait, I just love that this is, I love that Kevin gave us this whole thing for the first 40 minutes of this of like, oh, I'm this nice, warm, cuddly veteran who's
the young. There's anything. It's the bus.
Until you FaceTime your niece.
You either put on your headphones, you talk to a teen, you chill, you can take a nap, but like, listen, you don't need to be yelling out, you know, I don't even know anything.
You're right. You're right.
The
you're not
main
wrong.
Company spreadsheets was like, that was a bar right there. That was a bar.
That was
JJ's,
a bar.
JJ's lingo on this definitely beat the two of us.
Oh, man. Oh, all right, guys. This was this was a lot of fun, Kevin, as always. Keep hooping, man. We'll get you we'll that. We're going to hype you for that six-man award. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate it, fellas.
All right, man. Peace. Later.
If you like The Old Man and the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Yo, Trey.
Kevin, what's up, man?
You know, I've been thinking, what would have happened if the NBA never vetoes the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and we get CP3 in the same backcourt as Kobe in LA?
Well, you get a very happy Jack Nicholson, for sure.
And the Lakers probably win a bunch more championships. CP3 finally gets a ring or two or three, and the Kardashian empire is forever altered.
What did you just say? Hey, everybody, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier, and we're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
New York Times bestselling author Shea Serrano and Emmy winner Jason Concepcion are back together, this time aiming their high-powered microscope at the NBA in their new podcast, Six Trophies. Jason and Shea break down the league's biggest storylines this All-Star break and all season long by handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities each week. Things like the Denzel Washington in Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or, this is a fun one, the Step Brothers Catalina Wine Mixer trophy, given out to the thing the guys are most excited about for the upcoming week. What's more, Six Trophies is celebrating the All-Star break with a special mid-season episode. The Basketball Oscars will roll out the red carpet for the season's best and worst moments so far. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Six Trophies ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.